This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me today in the studio are Dashrin Johan and Lim Soo Ann, and we have one story for you today. So come 2056, Malaysia will be a super-aged society with over 20% of its population above the age of 65. And this is according to a recent study by the World Bank. So on the show today, we're going to first explore some of the new challenges that Malaysia will face as a super-aged society before honing in on a specific challenge, and that is of aged care. So for this, we're going to speak to local first-time filmmaker Lily Fu, whose film Meniti Senja focuses on Malaysian seniors who have been abused, exploited and abandoned in their twilight years.
And as always, if you have any thoughts you'd like to share, you can tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899.
So yes, the World Bank released a study in late November which concluded that rapid aging will be a crucial megatrend affecting Malaysia in the coming decades. So the report titled A Silver Lining, Productive and Inclusive Aging for Malaysia reported that this year more than 7% of the population will be aged 65 and above, which meets the conventional international definition of an aging society.
Yes, but by 2044 though, it's estimated that this will double, where 14% of the population is expected to be above 65 years of age, making Malaysia an quote-unquote aged society. Then, you know, as I mentioned earlier, by 2056, Malaysia will be a super-aged society with over 20% of its population above the age of 65. And, you know, this going from an aging to aged society in just 24 years, our country's transition is going to be happening at a similar pace to Japan's, and it also follows the trend of other high-income economies.
Yeah, so the report also highlighted new challenges that this aging megatrend will bring for Malaysia, and these are in areas such as employment, income security and aged care. So among the challenges highlighted include the fact that a slower population growth and the shrinking relative size of the working age population, this will account for a third of the decline in headline GDP growth by 2050. Poverty and vulnerability of older persons is said to increase with age and similarly lead to an increase in the old age dependency ratio, which would then increase the vulnerability of older persons. And this is as families struggle to cope with their care needs. So the prevalence of disabilities that accumulate over longer lifespans could also increase care needs.
Yes, and recognizing the breadth and complexity of this issue, the report focuses on three key policy areas with existing knowledge gaps, which are employment, income security and aged care. So on the employment front, it's estimated that only 45.2% of persons aged 55 to 64 are employed in Malaysia, which is lower compared to high-income economies. And this is partially driven by the low minimum retirement age and low EPF minimal withdrawal age. It's also noted that the employment rate of those aged 55 to 64 is particularly low for women. And the report also outlined that there is room for improvement in employment prospects for older workers, with no evidence to suggest a negative impact on the job prospects of younger workers. So older workers are more likely to be self-employed or engaged in part-time work, and that 43.1% of employed men and half of employed women between age 60 to 64 are self-employed.
Yes, and on the point about expanding adequate social protection coverage for older persons, the report stated that old age income security is dependent on individual retirement savings or familial support in the absence of broad-based social assistance programs. So only 60.8% of the Malaysian labour force contributes to the Employees Provident Fund, or EPF as we know it, which is low when you compare it to an aspirational group of high-income countries. And so the report also noted that almost 75% of EPF members have account balances below 250,000 ringgit at the age of 54. So simulations show that this would translate to a very mere monthly income of less than 1,050 ringgit.
And so employment and income security are a particular challenge for women, and the employment gap between men and women is the largest when we look at the ages of between 50 and 60. So only 17.9% of women in this demographic are employed, compared to 59.7% of men men. And women also make up a larger portion of those self-employed or those who are unpaid family workers. And this, of course, results in less social insurance coverage. So at age 54, the average woman has an EPF balance of 177,000 ringgit compared to 233,000 for men.
Gosh, there's a big gap there. Mm. And just on the final point on the growing importance of aged care, it's reported that three-generation households are declining from 41.1% in 2004 to 30.7% in 2016. So this potentially weakens the traditional role of familial provision for aged care. And the number of persons with functional limitations in activities of daily living is projected to double between 2020 and 2040. And there is also a high prevalence of non-communicable diseases, or NCDs, to contend with as well. And well, you know, public finance aged care is still very, very limited here in Malaysia. And, you know, private care does not provide wide coverage either. So basically, there's just a lot of problems to unpack there. And, you know, some of those we actually explored on Health and Living last Friday. We spoke to consultant geriatrician, Professor Dr. Tan Mo Pin, and Chai Sen Ting from the Malaysian Research Institute on Aging from UPM. And together with Dr. George Lee, they looked at how we can better protect and empower the older generation. So if you want to listen to that, just search for the podcast titled Malaysians Are Getting Older, But What Are We Doing About It? So just search for that on the BFM app or at bfm.my.
Yes, but circling back to that last point you highlighted, Juliet, about the growing importance of aged care, this was something that intrigued gerontologist Lily Fu, who is also the founder of Seniors Aloud, an online community for senior citizens in Malaysia. So Lily was one of the winners of this year's Freedom Film Fest, FFF. She won the film grant, and through this grant, the 72-year-old first-time director made the documentary film Maniti Senja, or The Twilight Years, which explores the alarming rise in cases of the elderly being left to fend for themselves in aged care centres, removed from the comfort of homes they knew and the children they raised.
Yeah, so with everything we mentioned earlier about Malaysia's lack of preparedness to face the challenges of being an aged society, Lily wonders, through her film, if the community living in this aged home and the struggles they are facing, if this is a if these are foreshadowing of things to come for more Malaysians in the future. So Lily joins us now to share more about the themes explored in her film and how she hopes it will push for policies to protect the elderly in Malaysia. So thanks for joining us, Lily. To start off, can you remind us a bit about the work you do through Seniors Aloud?
I started Seniors Aloud in the year 2008 because I found that there was a need for something like this. Of course, we had seniors group around, right? But at that time, not many of them were active online. And everybody was like going online, internet, social media. So I thought, why not start one, you know? You can connect better. You can reach out, you know, to more people, more seniors. Of course, a challenge in those early days was that many seniors also didn't know how to go online, social media and so forth. But I'm glad that I stuck with it and never gave up because I can see that a lot of changes from those early days and now, much more emphasis given to this group of so-called vulnerable people. And the government is finally getting its act together. And you can see, you know, things are being done. But as usual, you know, my complaint is always too little, too slow. But it's always better than nothing, isn't it? Yes, good start, I would think.
And Lily, you're 72 and just completed your first full-length documentary, Maniti Senja. Congratulations on that. What sparked the idea to make this film in the first place?
Yeah, I think it started a few years ago when I volunteered for a university survey of welfare homes, old folks' home, because they wanted to do come up with a directory to find out how many licensed ones there are and how many are not, you know. So I was part of this team, and I visited quite a number of these old folks' homes. And there was many that I saw that, you know, I just couldn't believe those conditions existed. So it really affected me a lot. That was a few years ago. So I took it upon myself because I realized that if, you know, somebody must do something about it. If nobody talks about it or highlight it, right, then, you know, it gets pushed under the carpet again. Of course, media, we do get media reports, but they are like, you know, once in a while you hear about them, those sensational cases, right? And then after that, it just kind of dies away and focus, the attention is focused on other things, you know. So the passion has been there for me to advocate for this group of people. They don't have a voice, really. Yes?
Yeah.
And somehow or other, even though we have so many CSO and NGOs doing such good work, very few seem to want to take up this kind of cause, you know. That's the motivation behind, you know, my work. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I think Freedom Film Network, they are aware that I have for some time wanted to do a documentary, but the chance never really came until this year. So in March, I was told that, you know, they're inviting, you know, submission for the grants. When I heard about this, I said, hey, why not? And that was in March. And that was when the MCO just kind of like about to start, right? So I was thinking, if you're going to have a lockdown or shutdown, no, why not make use of this time? So at that time, I thought it's a positive thing. I have more time on my hands. I can, yeah, go ahead and, you know, do research and, you know, try for the grant. But after getting the grant and after really starting on it, then I found that, you know, the MCO was actually a challenge because of the SOPs. And because we are dealing with a vulnerable group of people, it's not easy to get, you know, admission into the homes and to do filming with them at close proximity. So these were all some of the problems that I encountered.
But still, you persevered. And how did you get it done, you know, despite all of these challenges?
I'm so, so grateful to FFN. They really gave me a huge amount of support. Even a young filmmaker for the first time would need some help, right?
What of course.
At my age, yes. So they were wonderful. They got together a technical team for me, the crew, to help me out. So basically, what I did most of the research, the storyline, right? The narrative and all. But technically, even though they helped me with the workshop, no way I'm confident enough to handle, you know, the actual shooting of the whole documentary. So that was left to a very experienced cinematographer, Chin Ho. And I learned quite a lot, you know, just watching him at work. So I think I may be a bit more confident now to go into my second film.
And at 72, no less, you really are an inspiration, Lily. But let's talk about the film itself. You know, so I know that the main protagonist is Puan Muji Sulaiman, who runs an aged care home called Al Ikhlas. Tell us about her, you know, why you wanted to tell her story and also the story of those under her care.
Well, when I first started, my idea was actually to do an investigative kind of, you know, a documentary, a news type. But then I was advised that for this particular documentary, maybe it'd be better to get a protagonist and then go in-depth, right? So that was what I did. And I did a lot of research before shooting, right, online on Google and everything. Mm-hmm. And I found that this name kept cropping up, Muji Sulaiman, yes? So I felt that, yeah, she could be perfect. And so I got in touch with her. And the more I spoke with her, the more I felt, oh, I found the right person. Yes. First of all, you know, she is a senior herself and she was a former senior nurse at the hospital. So she will know about, you know, how to care for older people. And she had this huge, huge, big, warm heart, you know, to want to take in initially those patients who were discharged but had nowhere to go. Many of them were just left in the hospital for surgery or for some treatment. And then, you know, the people who left them there didn't come back to pick them up. And here we have the hospitals now wanting to, they need the beds. But where do these, you know, elderly go? They've got nowhere to go. So that was how it started. And Muji decided, I have a bungalow, big house, big enough to, you know, take on a few. But then the numbers increase, right? And, you know, all things work together for if you have a good cause and you're passionate enough. You know, I always believe somehow, you know, a way will be open for you. And then she came upon this mosque. It was no longer in use. Abandoned mosque for abandoned people. Perfect. It's a perfect fit.
Dear.
So that's how she got started with Al Ikhlas in Puchong. So right now, I think she has, about 50 to 60. Some of them are paying. Some of them are not. It depends on the circumstances. And yeah, so I think she's the perfect person to run a home like that. Through her and through our visits there, I have learned to, you know, understand some of the older people there and what led them to end up there. For example, you know, there's one Majila, she's featured in the documentary. She's the one who, you know, not knowing better, went and kind of signed over whatever she had. Now, this is not the, this is some a piece of advice I like to give to older people. Do not make a will and sign over everything and then, you know, make it known. And then, you know, because your property may be taken over and you may be kicked out of your house, you know, your property, and you will lose it. Then at that age, where can you go? You've got, you know, no support. Then there's another one that I met there who Juan Muji says was just left there at the doorstep like that. So, you know, it's tragic to say the least, you know. And, you know, as part of the research, I spent about 4 months moving around the homeless people downtown. And of course, they are the ones sleeping on the pavements and all, not the ones in the homes. And they have a different story, but the circumstances are more or less the same. And one interesting thing I discovered was that quite a number of them are single. So it's not just that they are abandoned, you know, but they are single. They've got no children. Some of them have siblings, but they have lost touch with their siblings. And I think the situation is not going to get better unless something is done. Because as you know, the figures are that, you know, we are aging. By the year 2030, we are officially an aging society.
Those are some pretty tragic stories that I guess many of us are probably unaware of, right? So what do you want the public to understand from watching your film?
Right. There are two main objectives, actually. Through the, there are many messages from the documentary, but I would say in a nutshell, one is that we need to have legislations. At the moment, there are none. Right. Last year, the former Deputy Prime Minister, Dr. Wan Aziza, she had already come up, you know, with a proposal for a draft legislation to be passed next year in Parliament to protect the rights of the elderly. But as you know, that government is no longer around, right? There's been a change of government, so I'm not sure what's going to happen to that draft bill. And the other one is that I want a message to go out to younger people, right? This is the time. It's never too late nor too early. The time is always right now to start preparing for old age. Because it takes time to lay the foundation, two things. One, to lay the foundation for good health in old age, right? We got to start building up. And number two, financial. Because to save enough to see you through the retirement years. You know, when EPF was first introduced, people expect, you know, everybody to kind of like retire at 55 and then give yourself 5 to 10 years and that should be enough, enough savings for 5 or 10 years. But as we all know, longevity, right? Lifespan has gone up to average of 76, which means when you retire at 60, goodness, you have to prepare for 15 to 20, 25 years, provided you're lucky enough. But the focus now is not on longevity so much. There's no point, you know, living a long life when you're aching all over, having pains and chronic illnesses, isn't it? So you have to age in good health, right? That's the key. Mm-hmm. So on these two fronts, everybody must prepare for their old age, financially and health-wise. And right now, because it's more urgent, help to take care of the elderly, the homeless, the abandoned and neglected.
Yes, and the situation for many of these vulnerable communities has just worsened because of the pandemic and the MCOs. And even if aid is offered to them, they may not be aware of it or don't have access to digital devices to access and apply for the aid, isn't it?
That's right. So, I mean, I've met a lot of them on the streets, right? And for the younger ones, at least they have years ahead. They're strong enough to try and look for work. But many of them that I met, many of them are contract workers, cleaners, you know, the cleaners, the restaurant helpers, they've lost their jobs because these establishments have closed for the time being. The aid they get from the government is 350. I think it's been increased, right? But still, you know how much is that if you really want to live, you know?
Yeah.
Not enough. So you find that there is a problem down there. So we are asking for legislation to protect them. So they have access to social security, to health care. I mean, there are, but a lot of them do not know where to get them. And I also found out something interesting for me, at least interesting, because I didn't realize it. You know, there are government homes, government welfare homes, old folks home, but they have criteria. They don't simply admit anybody.
Okay.
So, you know, they, for example, they only admit those who are more or less mobile and independent. They don't have the resources to provide like nursing care. If they need nursing care, they don't have the staff, the manpower to kind of look after them. So that's why when I was in the streets, I found that those who have gangrene, they are just lying there. Who would accept them? So they're sleeping on the pavement with their feet all black, And the groups that go around, the volunteer groups, they will be able to tell you more about what they see, the sights they see on the streets, the homeless. There are more of them now.
And, Lily, you mentioned earlier that we really need to address these issues, on a policy level. What more do you think Malaysia needs to be prepared for, considering that according to that report that we've been talking about by the World Bank, that Malaysia will be a super age society with over 20% of its population above the age of 65 by 2056?
Yeah, I think that, of course, everybody needs to play a part. It cannot rely on the government alone, right? And earlier I said, everyone, we have to look after our own health, our own finances, because it's our responsibility, basically. Right? Then we have the government stepping in. We have, private, public, whatever, all should come in together. And I have always hoped to see what we call a multi-ministerial committee on aging, because it takes all hands on board. You cannot just focus on, let's say, Social Security, which is the Ministry of Finance or the Ministry of Women, Family and Community. We also need Housing Board, the housing to come in, because public housing, we need to improve. There must be facilities for elderly to age at home in these public houses. You have been to some of them, I'm sure, the low-cost, right, B40. Some of them don't even have lifts. How do you expect the elderly to go up and down, especially when they don't have, they have weak knees and so forth. So housing and transport as well. If you look at it, even human resources, I'm really pushing, for employment opportunities, because many of the, I call them the rise of the new old. I consider myself in that group, the new old, or the young old, if you want, because we are still able, we are still productive. Just give us a chance. Open opportunities for us, And by that, of course, we need training maybe. We need upskilling. So not if there are any open, opportunities for free training especially, let us know about it. Invite us, So as long as we can look after ourselves at work, then at least we can take a bit of the burden off the government and our children as well. We become self-supporting, independent. Yeah. So that is one way, to go. So all these ministries, for example, they should get together, right? And come up with a plan, an overall plan to address all these issues, hand in hand. Collaborate, cooperate. Yeah. Don't compete against each other.
So just going back to the film, Lily, it will be screened this week as part of the Freedom Film Festival. How can people watch it?
Yeah, I think there's a link on my Facebook, Seniors Aloud Facebook. Also, you go straight to Freedom Film Festival 2020, and you have a whole list of screenings, how to get your tickets. The first 150 tickets are free for every screening, after which it's only ringgit.
ringgit? What a steal. Okay, but before we let you go, Lily, any last message you'd like to leave with us?
Yeah, I just, like I said, back to what I said earlier, be prepared for old age. Yeah? And this is going to be a very, all hands on board kind of situation where we need everybody to help out one another. Everyone grows old. Everyone has got parents. Everybody's got grandparents, right? And the way forward is that I see the aging population is going to grow. And there's a shrinking, there's going to be a decline in the young population, actually. If you look at the population graph, you see that this is not pyramid shape anymore. So we really, really have to prepare. And, ultimately, we have to depend on ourselves. So start early and be prepared, be aware. I want the film to be objective in the sense that, we want to hear from the young people as well. What made them send their parents, to an old folks home or a nursing home? They have their reasons, right? But we can understand where they're coming from. So hopefully, we can have legislations to protect the elderly and at the same time promote awareness to the younger people to be prepared. I always think that change begins with ourselves. So the old people, the vulnerable, the elderly, they have a part to play as well, right? So don't practice ageism on yourself. By that, I mean that, you know, you always think of ageism as coming from outside, right? Or the government, or the company, or this and that. But come on, many of the old people I know, or the elderly I know, they are so negative, you know, about themselves, right? That's what I mean by practicing ageism on yourself. They say, oh, yeah, too old already, cannot study, though. Too old already, cannot do this. Too old already, you know, the too old thing, you know. Yeah. So that is actually ageism, self-ageism. So be a bit more positive. Change your mindset, your attitude. Be prepared to learn. Be prepared to change, right, for the better. And that's how you learn to age successfully. I don't like the word anti-aging. There's no such thing. It's only the cosmetic and the wellness industry will use that term. I've given up using that long time ago, right? I go for positive aging. So whatever it is, but not anti-aging. You can't avoid it, you know? Yeah.
Well, thank you, Lily. That was Lily Fu, the founder of Seniors Aloud and a first-time filmmaker whose documentary, Maniti Senja, hopes to create awareness about the fate of the elderly community who have been abandoned in aged care homes or on the street nationwide.
Yeah, so again, this film is being screened as part of the Freedom Film Fest. That's the International Human Rights Documentary and Social Film Festival. The festival, which will be held online this year, kicks off from the 10th of December and will run until the 13th.
That's right. And, you know, there are loads of other films which will also explore the theme of being the other. I mean, that's the whole theme for this year's festival. So for more information, do head to freedomfilm.my. I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today's show, though. If you have any thoughts that you'd like to share with us, you can always tweet us at BFM Radio. You can send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899. Or you can drop us, the Bigger Picture team, a message on Facebook. Just search for BFM, The Bigger Picture. If you miss any part of the show, you can download the podcast at bfm.my/dailydigest. We're available on the BFM app. It's also available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. But coming up at 3 p.m. on Front Row, we've got more coverage on this year's Freedom Film Fest 2020. And Shamla Ganesan will be catching up with Anaha and Brenda Danker, who are the directors of the Freedom Film Network. So tune in to hear more about all the different documentaries being featured in this year's festival and why the theme of Bangsa Manusia, or Race Human, was selected for 2020. So that's coming up after the 3 p.m. news. You've been listening to The Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.